Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 5th. County buys Parsley Building for $15.5 million. Document says, purchase for sheriff's office could be part of nearly $27 million project. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. The Midland County Commissioners Court approved the purchase of a new sheriff's administration building for $15.5 million during a special meeting on Wednesday afternoon. According to Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez, the building is currently called the Parsley Building. It's on East County Road 120 and Farm to Market Road 715. Pioneer Natural Resources owns the Parsley Building. The sheriff's building doesn't appear to be attached to the land where a new jail complex could be built. That land is located at County Road 1140 and County Road 110. Quote, the offer is $15.5 million, but right now I want to make a motion to do a $7.5 million purchase and the other $8 million on October 1st of 2023, Sanchez said. Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey provided the Reporter Telegram a document that shows that the cost to modify the building and property is an additional $9.4 million. All totaled, the project cost is estimated at $26.9 million, according to the document, which was provided to Ramsey by Director of Public Works Andrew Avis. County Judge Terry Johnson claimed the renovations will cost $5 million, which would make the total project cost around $20 million. Johnson said he was not aware of any document that Ramsey said was handed to Johnson in court. Ramsey claimed he's been opposed to the purchase of the Parsley Building since the idea first came about. He said he's had extensive conversations with experienced architects and laid out his concerns for the court. He said the Parsley Building is approximately 120,000 square feet, and the program designs for the sheriff's office calls for 69,000 square feet. Quote, this is 73% larger than what is called for in the program, Ramsey said. He said one part of the Parsley Building is old and another is new. Quote, the new building is set up for an oil company with at least two conference rooms, one of which looks like a boardroom for a Fortune 500 company, Ramsey said. The new building has a movie theater that appears to be able to seat over 500 people. What does a Midland County Sheriff's Office need with a movie theater? He said. Ramsey also said he's been told the current office layout of the Parsley Building is not advantageous for the Sheriff's Office and will need to be redesigned. Quote, the internal renovation to change the Parsley Building into a Sheriff's Office will be both time-consuming and expensive, he said. He said the water and sewer systems in the new building are inadequate and bringing these systems up to standard will be costly. The document shows the cost to modify the building to match the program is $4 million, and the sum to modify the property is $5 million. The design is an additional $1 million. About the document, Midland County Public Information Officer Tate Owens wrote, quote, after speaking with our county attorney, Russell Malm, any discrepancy in the total cost for this project that was shared by a member of the court today more than likely derived from the parts of the project that are still moving. The document that was passed out in executive session has some items listed on it that may not end up having to be done to complete the project. As the project continues, decisions pertaining to the renovation are made and more concrete numbers are developed, we will be able to share those with the public, end quote. There are no places for vehicles to be parked or to house police canines inside the Parsley Building, according to Ramsey. These structures will need to be built, he remarked. Ramsey brought attention to the impact the purchase will have on the county's taxes. He said the public perception of the county purchasing such an ostentatious building will hurt the Midland County Commissioners Court reputation when it comes to disbursing Midlanders' money. Quote, it could even affect the financing of the new jail. Who is going to agree to a new tax if this is the way the county spends the money? Ramsey said. The other commissioners chose not to comment on Ramsey's remarks and adjourned. Family of girl struck by vehicle starts a GoFundMe. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The family of the 14-year-old Midland girl struck by a vehicle on New Year's Day has started a GoFundMe fundraiser to, quote, help with medical and final expenses, end quote. The 14-year-old was riding an electric skateboard when she crossed the intersection of Magellan Street and Mockingbird Lane in Northeast Midland and was struck by a vehicle traveling westbound on Mockingbird Lane, according to Midland Police. The teenager was transported to Lubbock, where she succumbed to her injuries on Monday, according to the city. Quote, my family and I are looking for donations at this time to help with medical and final expenses, said Scott Kearns in the GoFundMe post. Any and all help at this time would be greatly appreciated. Even just a share would mean a lot, end quote. The post states that the teenager was born in Odessa, raised in Midland, and was a freshman at Midland Freshman High School. It stated, quote, she was in advanced classes and was a member of the tennis team. She loved music, movies, skateboarding, hiking, biking, animals, shopping, spending time with friends and family, being outdoors, playing tennis, and bossing her brothers around. End quote. As of Tuesday night, GoFundMe.com reported 166 donations had been made and $15,156 raised.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Thursday, January 5th, 2023. Front page. Small Bites. Gorditas Don Elver showcases real Mexican food and family tradition by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Between a shared love for cooking and an itch to bring Midlanders affordable, authentic homemade food, Karen and Alex Martinez found an answer in Gorditas Don Elver. Laid in the foundation of Alex's Zacatecas Mexico roots, the husband and wife duo wanted to reach outside of the polluted Tex-Mex scene, digging deep into generational recipes and skills in order to perfect a masterful menu. With a nose for peppers, Alex incorporates six different kinds of chilies into his sauces. Yes, there's more than just one red pepper, making unique flavors and colors along the way. As a child, the construction man watched his grandmother form delectable food with limited machinery and continues to employ the same techniques today. She would boil the peppers and let them cool, he explained. Then she would take her hands, of course she washed them, and just squeeze, 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 get all the nectar, and she'd have a sauce. Family ties remain profound in the makeup of the local establishment. Without each other, the couple said navigating the ins and outs of being the little guys would feel almost unbearable, and they're happy to show the tall city what true Mexican comfort food tastes like. Gorditas Don Elver can be found at 210 West Longview Avenue, Suite G. Current operating hours are 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday and 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. To order ahead, call 432-218-8020. To check them out online, visit facebook.com/GorditasDonElverMidland or at GorditasDonElver on Instagram. You can also find them on Uber Eats. Hot Bites. It would probably take close to 1,000 words just to tell you the 20-plus gordita and burrito stuffings you can get at Gorditas Don Elver. So let's just go over some of the highlights. Community favorites include chicharron prensado, pork skin, and takes 3 days to properly cook, Philly cheese steak, bean and cheese, chili pasado with pork, barbacoa, carnitas, and more. Want to really feel like you've stepped back in time? Try a cup of sopita de la abuelita, a pre-meal soup tradition forged in a grandmother's love, widespread in Mexico, according to Karen. As for breakfast items, classic plates such as huevos rancheros, chilaquiles, tamales, and more. You can also get a gordita or burrito stuffed with cheese, eggs, sausage, steak. You think it, and Gorditas Don Elver cooks it. On Friday nights from 5 to midnight, the hotspot hosts Taco Night, full of Trompo Tacos al Pastor, Micheladas, karaoke, and good times. Para chuparse los dedos. Cold sips. Beyond classic soft drinks, including Coca-Cola Mexicana and Jarrito, Gorditas Don Elver offers many agua frescas, made fresh daily with ingredients by Karen and other staff members. Flavors include horchata, lemonade, cocoa, and my personal favorite, piña, pepino, y limón, pineapple, cucumber, and lemon. Delightfully light and fruity, each agua fresca feels like a sweet treat, crafted to break up the hefty goodness of the gorditas. Other drinks include make-it-your-way smoothies with, of course, fresh fruit and other juice ingredients. Overall vibes. Although Gorditas Don Elver sits quietly, tucked inside a miniature shopping strip, the family-owned establishment booms with character. Brightly painted striped walls surrounding a large logo caricature span across the back wall, making the fast-paced home kitchen restaurant all the more inviting. Tables, bar stools, and benches allow plenty of space for friends and family to cuddle up or spread out. However, for me, it's all about Karen and Alex. Not only does the couple get to the restaurant every day at 6 a.m., they also stay late, cleaning the floor, kitchen, appliances, and preparing for the next day. They've learned how to turn their own traditions into a space of comfort and peace for Midlanders, no matter their background. Furthermore, the two pride themselves on giving an authentic and family-friendly experience, an aspect often replaced with chain management energy. Without people like Karen and Alex Martinez in this dusty town, we'd forget what dedication, determination, and tough spirit looks and tastes like. Midlander elected president of AGC of Texas. Bryant elected head of Contractors Association. By Mella McEwen. Austin. Stacy Bryant of Midland has been elected the 2023 president of the Associated General Contractors of Texas, the association which represents most of the state's highway and bridge builders. Bryant is principal and general manager of Odessa-based Jones Brothers Dirt and Paving Contractors, which has been constructing and maintaining highways across the Permian Basin for more than 70 years. Bryant was inducted as the Associated General Contractors of Texas president on January 4th in Austin. It is an honor to be elected by my peers in the industry, which is a fundamental industry to our state, Bryant said. AGC of Texas represents approximately 250 general highway construction contractors and nearly 450 associate companies, which provide engineering, equipment, materials, and other needed industry services. All told, the highway construction industry employs thousands of workers and is responsible for approximately $10 billion worth of state highway construction and maintenance each year. Without roads and reliable infrastructure, products can't get to market, and people can't travel to where they need to be, Bryant explained. The highway construction industry is vital to all Texans and our great state. Stacy's father, Terry Bryant, a principal of Jones Brothers Dirt and Paving Contractors, served as the president of AGC of Texas in 2005. Jones Brothers Dirt and Paving Contractors have been safely building West Texas roads for more than 70 years and provide jobs for over 350 families. That's a legacy we are proud of, Stacy said. I'm also proud to carry on the family tradition of providing AGC of Texas leadership. This is an honor and responsibility I do not take lightly. Motorists drive hundreds of millions of miles every day on Texas roads. Last year, nearly 781 million miles were driven on Texas roads daily, including 573.9 million miles a day on pavement under the jurisdiction of the Texas Department of Transportation. Across the state, TxDOT is responsible for more than 80,000 miles of interstate, U.S. highways, state highways, and farm-to-market roads. The AGC will always be a partner with TxDOT. Through our member companies, we will continue to deliver quality roads in a safe and timely manner to our fellow Texans, who help fund the construction through their tax dollars, Bryant said. Bryant will serve as the AGC of Texas president through the end of 2023. Midland Reporter Telegram obituaries published Thursday, January 5th. Betty Nell Payne, February 1st, 1939 to December 29th, 2022. Betty Nell Payne of Midland, Texas went to heaven on December 29th, 2022 due to complications related to cancer. She was 83 years old. Betty was born on February 1st, 1939 in Eastland, Texas, to parents Leona Jones and Sam Bennett Jones. She married the love of her life, Jerry Payne, and the two of them were married on April 2nd, 1958 in Carbon, Texas. The couple had two children together, Terry and Missy. Betty is survived by her son, Terry, and his wife, Lori, of Austin, Texas, her brother Sammy Jones of Waco, and her sister Kathy Platt of Austin. Betty is also survived by seven grandchildren. Betty is preceded in death by her husband Jerry, her daughter Missy, her mother and father, her brother Robert, and sisters Patsy and Joy Beth. The funeral service is scheduled for Friday, January 6th at 9 a.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Memorial, to be immediately followed by a graveside ceremony with the reception afterwards. Flowers can be sent to Ellis Rest Haven, and any donations can be sent in memory of Betty Payne to Hospice of Midland or Crestview Baptist Church. Bonnie Snelson Robinson. Bonnie was born February 9th, 1928. To George and Katie Pace in Hodge, Louisiana. She went to business college in Abilene, Texas, and then started her career at Big Lake State Bank in January of 1946. While working at the bank, she began dating two twin brothers, Leon and Leo Snelson. After several weeks, Leon requested that she choose which brother she wanted to continue dating. In what she later called the best decision she ever made, she chose Leon. Bonnie and Leon were married May 29, 1948 in Big Lake, Texas. God blessed them with six sons over the next 14 years. Leon went to be with the Lord in 2001. In 2006, Bonnie was blessed again by marriage to her lifelong friend, Cecil Robinson. Bonnie and Cecil had 10 wonderful years together before he passed in 2017. She is survived by her children and their spouses, Donnie and Mona Snelson, Tim and Sherry Snelson, Steve and Janie Snelson, Mark and Trevis Snelson, and daughter-in-law Beverly Snelson Looney, plus her grandchildren and multiple great-grandchildren and one great-great-grandchild. She is preceded in death by her first husband, Leon Snelson, second husband, Cecil Robinson, her mother and father, her brother, Benny Pace, and sons, Terry Leon Snelson and Carrie Michael Snelson. Funeral service will be held on Friday, January 5th, 2023 at 2 p.m. at Hope Community Church in Midland. Burial at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland will follow the service. The family suggests any memorials be donated to Teen Challenge Midland or Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Donna Gail Pinkerton. Donna Gail Pinkerton, 76, went home to be with her Heavenly Father on Saturday, December 31st, 2022. She was born on September 8th, 1946 in Burke Burnett, Texas, to the late Cecil and Lucille Overby. Donna is preceded in death by her parents. She is survived by her sister, Pamela Hulsey, along with her four children, Stephanie Arnold, Sandy Miller, Lena Roman, and Charles Pinkerton, 10 grandchildren, 26 great-grandchildren, 2 great-great-grandchildren. The family would like to express a heartfelt gratitude to all of the staff at Ashton Medical Lodge and Senior Care Living Center for helping take care of her for many years. Viewing will be Thursday, January 5th, 2023, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., with the receiving of friends from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Friday, January 6th at 2 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Richard Keith Davis. Richard Keith Davis, 38, passed away Sunday, December 25th, 2022 in Midland. He was born February 1984 in Odessa. He is survived by his wife, Tiffany Davis, and his four children, Lillian, Philip, Evelyn, Ashlyn, his parents, David and Barbara Davis, brother, James, and wife, Paula Dublin, sisters, Angela Davis and Kimberly Hernandez, and husband, Eugene Hernandez, and several nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his grandparents, Horace and Earlene Davis, Lillian and L.J. Ballou, Uncle Harold Davis, Tim Davis, L.G. Ballou, and Aunt Vicki Spate. Memorial service will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel on January 8th, 2023 at 2 p.m. Memorial service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 5th, 2023. Culture. Three things to do in Midland this weekend. Pick out your next luxury toy. Looking for the perfect camper or boat to finish out the post-Christmas list? The annual Permian Basin RV and Boat Show takes over the Horseshoe Arena and Pavilion this weekend. On-site vacationers can include fifth wheels, travel trailers, pop-ups, toy haulers, and Class A, B, and C. As for boats, peruse a selection of pontoons, deck, bass, bay, offshores, runabouts, and even outboard engines. To see a list of items, visit https://bit.ly/3zbknim. Guests can also enter a giveaway by RSVPing to the festivities at that same website. For more information, visit www.midlandhorseshoe.com. Friday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 2514 Arena Trail. Celebrate 2023 with a homegrown market. Head over to the expansive outdoor Pueblo Viejo venue to celebrate the first weekend of the new year with local vendors and fellow Midlanders for an afternoon of shopping and more. With more than 30 merchants, patrons can purchase items such as exfoliating sugar scrubs, fresh-grown veggies, hand-twisted jewelry, sweet treats, and other knickknacks. Other attractions, food trucks on site, a New Year's-themed photo booth, live music, and a cash bar. The first 25 adults will receive a mystery gift card. Saturday, 1 to 6 p.m. at 104 South Terrell. Attend an award-winning show. Celebrating 50 years, world-renowned production Jesus Christ Superstar comes to the Wagner Knoll with a 90-minute run time, ready to entertain unlike any other. The first installment in the venue's Broadway in the Basin series, in partnership with Broadway HQ Nederlander National Markets. Jesus Christ Superstar reflects on the final weeks of Jesus Christ through the eyes of Judas. With an array of accolades, the rock opera appeals to both music fans and theater fans. A unique and crisp presentational tribute to the 1971 original. To learn more about the show's history, visit www.JesusChristSuperstar.com. The show is recommended for ages 10 and up. Tickets can be bought at www.wagnerknoll.com. January 8th, doors open at 6:30 p.m., show at 7:30 p.m. at 1310 North FM 1788. What's up in Midland? At the Horseshoe, annual Permian Basin Boat and RV Show Friday through Sunday. High-stakes production Saturday and Sunday. Midland County Livestock Association, January 12th through 14th. The West Texas Hunting Extravaganza, January 14th. And West Texas Wedding Expo, January 29th. At La Hacienda Event Center. Los del Limit y los Bravos de Ojinaga, January 20th. Laberinto, January 27th. At Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Farmers Market, Saturday and January 21st. Friday, Kahlo, her photos through Sunday. Unbridled, the art of Tom Lee through Sunday. Seymour Fogel, January. Simon Warunk, January. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Jesus Christ Superstar, Sunday. William Shatner and Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, January 12th. Chester Gregory, tribute to Jackie Wilson and Friends, January 24th. Aaron Lewis, January 27th. Fortune Feimster, January 29th.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is January 5th, 2023. Mayor accused of illegal activity trying to change government form. Within hours of terminating Odessa City Manager Michael Marrero December 13th, Mayor Javier Hoven signed a $338,000 contract with a one-year company to provide professional services for the benefit of the interim city manager. The city of Odessa also provided the company, T2 Professional Consulting, an initial payment of $50,000 on that date. Hovind's actions prompted District 2 City Council member Steve Thompson to accuse him of trying to change the city of Odessa's form of government and engaging in illegal activity. "We operate under a strong city manager, mayor as a figurehead," Thompson started to say. "Used to be," Hovind interrupted. "That is the way it is today. That's what the charter says," Thompson said during Tuesday's council meeting. "So you're trying to change our form of government. You want to be a strong mayor and have a weak city manager." Thompson accused Hovind of signing the contract with T2, despite the fact the rest of the council had not vetted the company, which was founded by Michael Wilson, a retired Keller police chief. "We know nothing about this man. He's been in business for a year. He's an ex-police chief. I don't know that he has the qualifications to be a consultant for this complicated of a process. He doesn't have a staff. He works out of his house," Thompson said. District 3 council member Gilbert Vasquez also expressed surprise about the agenda item. "It seems like there's a request here for this council to eventually agree on a vote on a $338,000 budget item for the benefit of the interim city manager. It doesn't say anything about the $338,000 helping us search for a city manager," Vasquez said. Hovind said T2 will help the city find Marrero's replacement. He accused city staff of leaking information, working in cahoots with the media, and creating a false narrative. He also insisted there was nothing illegal about his actions. "For several hours, it looked like the city wouldn't need to find immediate replacement for Marrero or city attorney Natasha Brooks, who was terminated during the same December 13th meeting." Civil rights activist and attorney Gavin Norris filed a lawsuit against the city, alleging his and other citizens' rights were violated by Hovind when he refused to let them speak prior to the vote. He followed up by filing a motion asking Judge John Schrode of the 358th Ector County District Court to issue a temporary restraining order, essentially voiding Marrero and Brooks's termination and the appointments of Interim City District Attorney Dan Jones and Interim City Manager Agapito Bernal. A hearing date of January 10th was scheduled, but Schrode granted Norris's motion for the temporary restraining order Tuesday, stating irreparable harm would be done if he waited for the January 10th meeting. The judge said the city council could not move against the pair or appoint interim people unless they heard from the citizens prior to any such vote. According to court documents, Schrode was to determine if his order should be made a temporary injunction pending a final hearing on the lawsuit on January 10th. However, the judge rescinded his restraining order on Wednesday after the city council scheduled a special city council meeting for 9 a.m. Monday to take up the terminations and interim appointments again. According to the agenda, members of the public will be able to address the council prior to the vote. Contract details. The contract states T2 will provide Bernal training in leadership processes and tools, recruitment and selection, and group development and engagement. It doesn't specify what jobs fall under recruitment and selection. In another part of the contract, it says T2 will conduct diagnostic meetings with city leadership and internal and external stakeholders, creating a benchmark committee and guide the council in public relations. The committee will select a team of 3 to 5 subject matter experts and discuss why does the job exist. In addition, the benchmark committee will provide unique insight as to the key accountabilities needed for the interim city manager and next city manager. Hoven said his actions were based on the council's actions of December 13th. He and Thompson argued back and forth, and Thompson also asked Hoven if a deposit had been made, which it had been. The action taken by the council is a legal process, and so this is a budget item, Hoven said. No money, $338,000, has been written or given either by me or a member of this council. Following the meeting, Hoven clarified the city did pay T2 with an initial $50,000. Hoven said just because the city has always done things a certain way doesn't mean the council should continue to do things that way, and T2 will help provide some guidance. He said T2 will help the city ensure the right people are in the right positions and are trained properly. When Hoven got to the item on the council's agenda, Thompson immediately asked if the contract had already been issued and paid for. Justified action? Hoven responded by saying the council voted on December 13th to take any and all action necessary to seek services to be able to go out and commence the process of looking for a city manager. The mayor said that discussion took place, and that's why they were now discussing the budget item. Thompson and Hoven then got into an argument that prompted Jones to intercede. You unilaterally made a decision to go with this company. You signed a contract the day after you fired the current city manager, Thompson said. Council, Hoven interrupted loudly. The council removed and reappointed the appointees. Let's make that clear, council. It's okay. Call it whatever you want. Are you okay? Are you okay? Thompson said. Be correct in what you are saying. Oftentimes you're putting words in my mouth, Hoven chided Thompson. I asked you a question, Thompson replied. You are making a statement, Hoven said. Gentlemen, please, let's settle down, Jones jumped in. We do not need to get into this. Thompson went on to ask again if the contract had been executed and if a deposit had been made. If so, the council member pointed out no request for proposals was ever issued. T2 is only 15 months old, and the company has not been vetted by the entire council. Thompson also said the contract wasn't part of the packet the council members receive prior to meetings. He said he had to ask for it from the city secretary because Jones was unable to provide it, which he thought was odd given his position as interim city attorney. I think we have an illegal contract that you personally, Mayor, personally got the money for and gave it to the consultant. Therefore, you have bound the city of Odessa to a $338,000 contract without council approval, Thompson said. Hoven asked Jones if his actions were covered by his December 13th motion to take any and all actions necessary to fire Marrero and start a search for a replacement. My understanding of the law means if you wanted to go to the Empire State Building in New York City, stand on top and say, hey, does somebody want to come work for the city of Odessa? That could be any and all possible action, Jones replied. That's how far any and all goes. A recording of the December 13th council meeting shows Hoven and city council member Mark Mata were repeatedly interrupted by Norris while they were making their motions regarding Marrero and Brooks and their interim replacements, so it's not clear what their actual motions were. Norris was expressing his displeasure at not being allowed to speak about the terminations prior to the vote. Difference of opinion. Hoven told Thompson it was only his opinion that the city is now committed to pay T2 $338,000. He said the contract is open-ended and the price tag is up to $338,000 for 12 months, and he did not anticipate needing their services for that long. However, the contract itself does not give the length of the contract, nor does it place a limit on the contract amount. Instead, it states, city shall pay professional for services actually performed a monthly set fee of $24,000 for an annual base professional fee of $288,000. Payment when is due at the time of the execution of this agreement shall be a fee of $50,000. The contract states T2 shall work under the direction of Hoven, the council, or his designee. Moreover, it says all notices, communications, and reports must be given to the City of Odessa. Attention, Mayor Javier Hoven. It also provides a personal email address to hovenformermayor@gmail.com. In addition, the contract states T2 cannot share any reports, information, data, or other documentation without the express prior written approval of council. Forensic audit. Hoven and Thompson also got crosswise with each other on another agenda item. Hoven brought up the possibility of having a forensic audit done on the city's finances and became upset when Thompson accused him of suggesting the city staff was engaged in wrongdoing. Forensic audits, by description, attempt to find illegal financial activity, Thompson pointed out. Well, this would clear us of any of those accusations, Councilmember Denise Swanner said. I'm not making an accusation. Once again, I want to clarify for the record. Mr. Thompson once again spoke for me, Hoven said. The mayor said the city has not followed the common practice of changing auditors every few years, and he wants an audit of the city's annual audits. Raises. In other action, the council also learned that when it voted to give the city's public safety personnel immediate raises on December 13th, some positions weren't included. In addition, he said adjustments need to be made to avoid compression, the phenomenon that leads to less experienced employees being paid more than longtime employees. Director of Finance Larry Fry told the council to fix the issue. The city will have to add an extra $60,000 in salaries to the $5.8 million council members have already set aside for the raises for the next 2 years. In addition, he said the city will be responsible for another $1 million in benefits. Meeting on Monday calls to allow public comment. Judge issues TRO and then rescinds it on firing of city manager attorney. The city of Odessa has scheduled a special meeting for 9 a.m. Monday to once again discuss terminating Michael Marrero and Natasha Brooks. The agenda expressly states members of the public will be allowed to address the council prior to a vote being taken. Judge John Schrode of the 358th Ector County District Court has rescinded the temporary restraining order he filed Tuesday, voiding the terminations of the pair. He also canceled a hearing Monday where he would have considered making the TRO a permanent injunction until a final hearing is held in a lawsuit filed by civil rights activist and attorney Gavin Norris. Norris said Wednesday afternoon the city's decision to schedule the special meeting was an admission of guilt. We don't believe it would have happened if not for us filing the lawsuit, Norris said. The attorney said his firm will continue to hold the city council accountable for their actions and will seek legal remedies on this issue and other issues. The Odessa City Council voted 5-2 to terminate Brooks, the city attorney, and Marrero, the city manager, December 13th, following an executive session without offering an explanation. They also appointed Dan Jones as interim city attorney and Agapito Bernal as interim city manager. Norris filed a lawsuit against the city alleging Mayor Javier Hoven violated citizens' rights by not allowing them to speak prior to the vote. The December 13th meeting agenda said any member of the public may address the city council regarding any of its agenda items before or during the consideration of this item. On December 28th, Norris followed up with a motion asking Schrode to void the actions of the council and to issue a restraining order to maintain the status quo of City Attorney Natasha Brooks and City Manager Michael Marrero to their respective positions prior to the actions taken by the council. He further asked the judge to issue an order stating the council cannot fire, remove, demote, or interfere with Brooks's and Marrero's position without first allowing members of the public to address the city council. A hearing on the matter was set for January 10th, but Schrode granted Norris's motion Tuesday, writing that there'd be irreparable injury, loss, or damage to Norris before notice could be served to the city of Odessa, and the January 10th hearing could be held. In addition to voiding Marrero and Brooks' terminations, Schrode also said the city council is temporarily prohibited from promoting Dan Jones as interim city attorney and Agapito Bernal as interim city manager without allowing Norris and other citizens and members of the public the right to address the city council first. Hovens and council members Mark Mata, Denise Swanner, Chris Haney, and Greg Connell did not respond to a text and email asking for comments on the restraining order, but Swanner and Mata texted Schrode's most recent order Wednesday afternoon. Glad the right decision was made, Mata texted. In response to the restraining order being issued, council member Gilbert Vasquez, who voted against the terminations, emailed, "I regret that the majority council ruling on December 13, 2022 has come to this." Council member Steve Thompson, who also voted against the terminations, was pleased by the judge's decision. Prior to Wednesday's decision, people in the Odessa City Manager's office and the City Attorney's office said they did not know who was running the day-to-day operations of the city, and they'd not been given any directives from Hovind or anyone else. Odessan accused in shooting confesses, cites revenge. An Odessa man arrested last week on a murder charge told authorities the victim's juvenile sons tried to rob him the day prior, and it was one of the sons' cars that was supposed to be shot at. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers went to check on Maurice Rogers, 36, on December 28th because he didn't show up to work. When they arrived, they found spent cartridge cases in the street and bullet defects in the front of Rogers' home in the 1000 block of East 36th Street. Inside, they found Rogers dead. Surveillance video from a neighbor's house showed two people approach the house at 10:15 p.m. December 27th and fire multiple shots in the direction of Rogers' home, the report stated. People came forward and told detectives Rogers' sons had attempted to rob Harvey Gutierrez, 31. Several hours before the shooting, one witness said Gutierrez told them if he didn't find Rogers' son, he'd go after Rogers, the report stated. Other witnesses told detectives Ashton Isaiah Munoz, 18, and a 16-year-old boy helped Gutierrez carry out retribution against Rogers' son, according to the reports. Gutierrez waived his Miranda rights and confessed he, Munoz, and the 16-year-old had discussed shooting up one of Rogers' son's cars to pay them back for the attempted robbery, the report stated. Gutierrez intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly caused the death of Maurice Rogers by instructing his associates to discharge firearms at or in his direction, the report stated. Gutierrez was arrested on the first-degree felony charge of murder December 29th and was released Monday after posting a $100,000 surety bond. Munoz and the 16-year-old were arrested on murder warrants in El Paso December 30th and are expected to be driven back to Odessa by the end of the week. A detention hearing for the younger teen is scheduled for Monday. Quick hits, Sand Hills Stock Show and Rodeo. The Sand Hills Stock Show and Rodeo will take place through January 14th at 218 West 46th Street. There will be rodeo performances, roping, a livestock show, and more. Visit sandhillssr.com. Knit and Stitch. The Ella Noel Art Museum, 4919 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Knit and Stitch from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. today. and February 2nd at the Presidential Archives and Leadership Library. Visit noelartmuseum.org. Empty Bowl Fundraiser. The 22nd annual Empty Bowl Fundraiser benefiting the West Texas Food Bank has been scheduled from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. January 28th at Midland College at the Gallery, 3600 North Garfield Street, Midland. All the soup you can eat, and you can purchase handmade bowls. General admission is $15. Table of 8 is $500 donation. To purchase tickets or table, visit tinyurl.com/2S3TH6PM. PBAF Scholarships. Permian Basin Area Foundation is pleased to announce the opening of the 2023-2024 Scholarship Cycle. Students and counselors may view eligibility and selection criteria for the scholarship on the PBAF website, www.pbaf.org. The application opened January 1st and the deadline is March 31st. The foundation is looking forward to connecting Permian Basin students with local scholarship opportunities, Sherry Heiting, education officer, said. Applicants are required to complete the only one online application, which will then place them in a pool of scholarships for which they may qualify. However, it will be very important to read all instructions because there are scholarships with unique criteria and may require a second essay. Permian Basin Area Foundation awarded more than $1 million in scholarships to area students during the last academic year. These awards are made possible by numerous donors to the foundation's scholarship funds in support of local students pursuing higher education. To learn more about scholarships, grants, and the philanthropic work of donors partnering with Permian Basin Area Foundation, visit www.pbaf.org or call 432-617-3213. Adrian Chavez died Tuesday. Odessa defense attorney Adrian Chavez, a member of a well-known family filled with attorneys, died Tuesday. The son of Tony Chavez and the brother of Brian and Luis Chavez. Adrian Chavez graduated from Permian High School in 1987, and he obtained a bachelor's degree in history from the University of Texas at El Paso in 1991. He obtained his law degree from Texas Tech University in May 1994 and received his license in November 1994. Chavez ran into trouble with the State Bar of Texas on a handful of occasions. Most recently in June, he received a public reprimand for failing to return a client's complete file to the client and was ordered to pay $800 in attorney's fees. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, he was also sentenced in July 2021 to 24 months in prison and 3 years probation by a U.S. District Court judge after the then 52-year-old pleaded guilty to using a drug user in possession of a firearm. He was also ordered to pay $10,000 in fines. Local news roundup. United Way making end of campaign push. After launching the campaign in August with a goal of $1.5 million, United Way of Odessa still seeks donations to meet its goal. With workplace campaigns wrapping up, United Way sits at $500,000 short of goal, which is needed to fund 16 agencies. In fact, the community needs are greater than we anticipated last August when the goal was set, Christina Escobar, executive director, stated in a news release. There is an increased need in services provided by the various agencies benefited by these fundraising dollars. This last-minute appeal for extra support will go toward funding allocations in 2023, she said. If you are only able to give $10, make the pledge to give. It all adds up to get us closer to our goal of supporting more of those in our community who simply need a hand up. Donations can be made once or monthly at www.unitedwayodessa.com or at the United Way of Odessa office located at 128 East 2nd Street, Odessa. Tropical Odyssey Exhibit Coming to Midland Library. Tropical Odyssey, A Journey in Conservation, is set to open at the Midland County Centennial Library on January 13th. Developed by Minotaur Mazes, Tropical Odyssey follows the story of sustainable butterfly farming in the rainforest, the press release stated. This educational maze is designed to lead its visitors through the story of butterflies and other rainforest enterprises that impact your daily life. Driven by an interactive maze experience, the Tropical Odyssey is an immersive adventure with theme challenges and exercises for young visitors. This exhibit is brought to Midland County Public Libraries through the support of the Helen Greathouse Charitable Trust, the Ray Charitable Trust, and the MCPL Foundation and Carnegie Circle. Visit tinyurl.com/YCW3EPRN for more information. Government award applications open. Keep Texas Beautiful, in partnership with the Texas Department of Transportation, issued a press release on Tuesday morning to apply for Governor's Community Achievement Awards to Texas communities. Application deadline is 5 p.m. February 16th. Visit tinyurl.com/3ZZ9TVX9. 10 winning communities will share $2 million in landscaping awards from TxDOT, with the amount awarded based on population size. The funds are used for landscaping projects along state right-of-ways. A community's environmental program is judged on achievements in 7 areas: community leadership and coordination, public awareness, environmental education and youth engagement, beautification and community improvement, litter prevention and cleanup, solid waste management, litter law and illegal dumping enforcement. Adventures in Art. Register for the monthly studio classes of Adventures in Art at the Ellen Noel Art Museum for students ages 6 through 12 at 2:30 p.m. on the second Sunday of each month. Students will tour current exhibitions and do a related studio art project. Advanced registration only. Class size is limited and scholarships are available. Sign up for this class by contacting Annie Stanley, educator, at education@noelartmuseum.org or by phone at 432-550-9696, extension 213. Deadline for registration is the previous Thursday by 5 p.m. Advanced registration is $20. Urban Air Adventure Park, Midland Host Grand Opening. Urban Air Adventure Park, 4706 North Midkiff Road, Suite 1, will hold its grand opening at 10 a.m. Saturday. The first 200 guests in line on grand opening day will purchase a Platinum or Ultimate Pass, will receive free basic access to the park for one entire year. The park will open at 10 a.m. Some of the key attractions include Sky Rider, virtual reality, warrior course, and climbing walls, a news release said. Visit urbanair.com/texas-midland for more information.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.